This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer. Today in Your Health, quitting smoking. There are still some 46 million smokers in the United States, but now there's an even larger group of ex-smokers. In a moment, we'll hear about an innovative program for low-income people trying to quit. First, NPR's Brenda Wilson reports on how anti-smoking efforts have evolved over the decades.
It's been nearly half a century since U.S. Surgeon General Luther Terry declared that smoking had been linked to lung cancer and was hazardous to health. Smoking in the United States has been on the decline ever since.
Physicians started telling their patients about the dangers of tobacco use and letting them know that they should quit smoking.
Dr. Anne Malarche of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says smoke-free policies were mainly a patchwork in the early years after the Surgeon General's report. Warnings were placed on cigarette packets, radio and television cigarette ads were banned. Malarche says people who wanted to quit were left to their own devices.
Avoiding places where they typically smoked, avoiding situations where they wanted to have a cigarette, removing all tobacco products from their house, perhaps avoiding other smokers for a while.
For millions and millions of Americans, such strategies worked and they quit. Then in 1984, the first nicotine gum became available by prescription as a way to help more people quit. A bigger nudge came in 1994 when California became the first state to outlaw smoking in all restaurants and bars. As other states followed suit and smoking became less socially acceptable, the smoking rate fell to where it is today, 20%. John Hughes, a professor of psychiatry at the University of Vermont, works with people who have not been moved by these changes.
Well, public health messages such as the media and increasing taxes and worksite restrictions are very important in motivating people to quit, but they don't help them quit.
Especially the hardcore smokers, he says.
There are some people that you can motivate and motivate and motivate, and they can't quit.
And for such people, he says, medications can help. There's the nicotine gum and patches, which can now be bought over the counter. There are a total of 7 medications. Most are nicotine substitutes, but 2 are drugs that ease cravings. People can also get one-on-one counseling, call quit lines, or join a support group. Combined with medication, Hughes says, these methods are much more effective than trying to quit cold turkey. But most people don't avail themselves of drugs or counseling. Cost is a barrier, but the bigger reason, Hughes says, is that people think they ought to be able to quit on their own.
I think it's because, you know, if you have drug abuse and you get over to your own, you don't tell anybody about it. But if you quit smoking, if there's a conversation on smoking, you brag and tell about it. So I think people hear about all the people who are fortunate enough to be able to do it on their own and don't hear about the people that are struggling.
But Simon Chapman at the University of Sydney in Australia says quitting smoking has become too medicalized.
The subtext of that is if you try to do it alone, you're unlikely to succeed.
Both Chapman and Hughes have conducted research that was funded by pharmaceutical companies. Even so, Chapman fears the balance in smoking control tilts towards the drug industry.
My objection is to the megaphoning, the drowning out effect of the hugely resourced messages which are going out to the community, which are saying, if you want to quit, don't try to do it alone.
It's important to remember, he says, that 75% of the people who quit did do it on their own without any help. But then there's the 25% who don't. Brenda Wilson, NPR News.